All right, then welcome everyone and thanks for listening in today. I'm here with Scott Swigart from Cascade Insights. And today we're going to be talking about finding quality answers to strategic questions. Leading enterprises can't confidently answer strategic questions in a data vacuum or with fraudulent data. And we're gonna talk about, you know, what we mean by fraudulent data. You basically need very high quality insights from the exact professionals that help you with your business decisions as a company. And so we're going to talk about the business imperative for quality research, how many research firms today fail in that approach, and how utilizing tech can be the right way to enable mutual success. Now, before we go there, let's start with some introductions. I'm going to start with a quick intro about myself and Mutinex. And then, Scott, I'm going to hand it over to you to introduce yourself and talk about Cascade Insights. So my name is Sasha. I'm the CEO of Mutinex. I started the company about 6 years ago. Before joining Mutinex, I worked at McKinsey & Company out of the Los Angeles office and was primarily tasked with designing the strategies for large tech companies, for example, Twitter, Microsoft, and their tech imperative over the next 10 years. So topics like big data, AI, virtual and mixed reality, etc. And in our projects, we had to leverage a lot of research, and very often didn't have the answers to questions because it was so cutting edge. And we were frustrated overall with the experience we had with different market research firms, whether it was expert networks to talk to professionals, whether it was running surveys, B2B surveys. We always had issues, inconsistencies, and couldn't rely on getting the insights in time, which eventually led to starting Mutinex. And Mutinex is what we call basically an AI-powered knowledge platform. We leverage what's called the Mutinex graph that indexes about 1 billion professionals and all of their characteristics, and then have an automated recruiting platform that can in real time recruit the exact audiences for the needs of our clients. So if a client needs 10 AI experts in agriculture in Africa, or they need 3,000 marketing decision makers across 20 countries and 100 industries, we can deliver this in real time to our clients and have been transforming the B2B market research space over the last 6 years as a result. And with that, Scott, I would like to hand over to you to talk about Cascade Insights.
Yeah, you bet. So Cascade Insights is a market research firm that is focused exclusively on the B2B technology sector. So I won't name names, but think about the biggest B2B tech companies out there, and they're all our clients. And we are advising them all the time on buyer personas and buyer journeys, and is their messaging going to resonate, and helping them move into adjacent markets, helping them market their products more effectively, increase their sales, all of these kinds of things. And our primary tool to do that is market research. And so we were fielding qualitative and quantitative studies, which is really what brought us to Mutinex, was the need for really good quantitative data was just not being met by the providers of participants that we had been working with, and came across Mutinex and have never looked back.
Amazing. Yeah. And it's great to be sitting with you here today, Scott, and talk about quality in B2B research and how it can empower companies, because I think we're really thinking along the same lines as companies. So if we jump right in and start with what's the key to top performing businesses in competitive markets, what do enterprises need for better business results today? It's a very challenging environment, right? And so for companies to really stay ahead of competition, I think, you need innovative thinking, which is definitely a buzzword. You want to differentiate yourself from competitors, and it needs to be differentiation that is really felt by the customers, and not just words. You want to get customer feedback, which is probably the best indicator of how you're doing as a company, which could be end clients, it could be partners, vendors, and you know, customized and proprietary insights that are really tailored to your business needs and that are proprietary in the sense that you have access, potentially in a way that your competitors don't.
If you think about it, at the end of the day, a business's success is determined on the decisions they make and how well they execute on those decisions, right? Strategies and tactics. And making decisions, okay, well, you hire smart people, everybody can hire smart people. It really comes down to asking the right questions and getting high quality answers to those questions. You know, there's a saying that the most dangerous thing is what you know that's no longer so. Mm-hmm. And with COVID-19 and just the pace of technology, what you know this year can be no longer so in 2 years. And so these business leaders have to constantly be open to the shifts that are happening out there. And research is a key way to bring those insights. And for the companies that are doing it well, it's been a tremendous opportunity. The shift to remote work drove a lot of technology adoption. We look at the challenges in the supply chain. That's not a problem that there aren't enough ships, or enough ship captains or things like that. It's a logistics problem, which is really nowadays, a technology problem. And so a lot of the challenges, that we face and a lot of the businesses out there that are going to solve these problems are doing it with a technology underpinning, and they're moving at the speed at which they can understand the issue, make decisions, and bring solutions to market.
So what would you say, Scott, are the big problems today in enterprise decision making?
Well, so, some of these aren't new. I mean, we've had groupthink for a while. The other thing is customer capture. So a lot of organizations are really captured by their customers and what their own customers keep telling them. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with being customer obsessed, as some people would say. But there's a whole population out there that are potential customers then that you're not hearing from. And so I'm a Formula One fan, and Red Bull Racing is a team I like. And one of the team principals said, we kind of got ourselves into a corner because we've got this incredible driver, and the driver kept giving feedback to the engineers, and they ended up engineering a car that only this driver could drive. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's two people on the team. So, and it, it kind of boxed us out of advantages that other teams were getting by taking a more holistic approach to their engineering. So companies can do the same thing. They can be led so far down a rabbit hole by their own customers that they're a little bit blinded to what the broader market wants. And so the only way to fix that is to get those voices, of, non-customers, basically. And that means just, going outside of the people that and going outside of the people that you have easy access to.
Yeah, I fully agree. And, basically to rephrase a bit in my own words, right? You do probably always want to get some feedback from your existing customers, but you don't want this to be the only input. You want to refresh, the people you talk to. So within your customer base, talk to different people, and then also go beyond, talk to competitors, talk to prospective customers, right? People that are not working with you. Why are they not working with you? Why have they chosen someone else? One of the ways to do this, or in many ways, one of the only ways to do this is really through custom research, right? You want to have efficient, scalable custom research that allows you to reach these people and then collect these insights and then make decisions based on those insights. Now, if we tie this back to our initial thesis around business decision making and B2B research, what would you say? Apologies, one second. What would you say, Scott, are or why isn't custom B2B research today the norm? Why isn't everyone jumping on it and doing what you described, which is constantly interviewing their customers, refreshing the sample, going beyond, talking to competitors, talking to, you know, prospects? Why is that not the norm if this could be the key to success for so many businesses?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you look at Fortune 500 tech companies, which is who we deal with, a lot of them have big, you know, they have big market research departments. But there's been a little bit of a crisis of conscience in leadership. We've talked to clients who have said, you know, my VP doesn't even believe quantitative research anymore. They look at it and they say, this doesn't make sense. There's no way this can be true. I don't trust it. It's not going to be an input to my decision making. And so on one hand, people recognize the need, they recognize the value. And there can be reasons like budgets and, you know, how fast can you execute and things like that, and just opinions and people who think they know everything. But a big issue that has impacted a lot of our clients is just the leadership just doesn't believe the data. I mean, the senior people, a lot of times they got there because of their spidey sense, right? They've got, you know, this sort of internal, this doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Because they're always dealing with filtered information, you know, from their subordinates or whoever. Everything's always managed and packaged before they see it. And so they've just developed really strong intuitions and really strong, you know, kind of pattern matching. Mm-hmm. And if data comes in from a big quant study and they're just like, you know, there's no way the answer to this question is right, therefore why should I trust any of the rest of this?
And I know, Scott, that Cascade Insights did some work on that, right? You guys did some actual, I want to call it maybe experiments, where you really went and try to figure out where are, for example, respondents coming from in a quant study, right? And you went all the way down to the source. So can you maybe talk a little bit about what you find, and then, you know, how could it explain possibly what you just talked about, which is executives don't trust the data?
Yeah. So a lot of people who listen to this, you know, I think their ears are going to perk up, because the things I describe, they're going to say, yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. And so we were running studies, and we would get something, you know, we would ask a question about what CRM system are you using, right? What customer relationship management system are you using? And, you know, Salesforce came in fourth. And so we kind of scratch our head, and it's like, you know, they're the leading, you know, they're the world's leading CRM. I don't think they're really fourth, you know, so what's going on here? And then we ask some other question about how, you know, companies are doing sales forecasting, what tools they're using. And 100% of respondents should have said Excel. They could have also said other things, but 100% of them should have been using Excel, maybe plus some other stuff to do sales forecasting and revenue forecasting. And, you know, these kind of bespoke revenue intelligence solutions were showing up at like 80%. And we know that they have, this category has really low market penetration. And spreadsheets were showing up at like 20%. And we said, okay, you know, this just can't be right. And so we call up our panel provider, and we get a project manager on the phone, and we sort of explain this to them, and they're like, okay, you know, we'll see what we can do. And so they do some more fielding. We're seeing the same kind of stuff. We're putting all kinds of traps in, you know, names of fake products and this kind of stuff to try to filter out low quality respondents. We're adding write-ins, and, you know, we're just seeing word salad for the write-ins. It's like, that's kind of a sentence, I guess, you know, but it's like, you know, we revenue forecast for increased business execution, right? It's like,
not really. It's not really a sentence.
Yeah. It's like what a weird thing to say. So finally we said, okay, let's get sneaky. Let's figure out what's going on here. So we put a question in our survey where we said, this was after it had launched, we put a question in towards the end, and we said, what company sent you this survey? Because we wanted to understand if the survey was coming to them from the panel provider that we were paying $60, $70, $80 a complete for, or whether they were, you know, farming it out to somebody else. And what we saw was we were getting respondents from just the bottom of the bucket, just take surveys for cash, websites, where people were being paid 75 cents, 80 cents. So now if we're talking about business professionals who are making technology decisions about the revenue forecasting solutions their company is going to buy, and this survey is being fielded to, you know, take surveys for 80 cents, make money, earn bitcoins, how many of the people we want are over there?
Yeah.
Zero. It's absolutely zero. And so, you know, and so we went and we talked to our panel company about this, and finally they came clean and they said, look, here's how it works. We field your survey, and if the survey performs well, then, you know, we continue fielding it. If it's not performing well, then we hand it off to a partner, and it's all automated. This used to be, you know, kind of done by hand and all of this, but the thing that's changed over the last few years is
it's a panel marketplace, basically, right?
Where it's a panel is, yeah, yeah. I mean, as my mom would say, you know, they're all drinking from the same trough.
Yeah.
And so there's no differentiation. And if you're targeting a niche audience, you're going to end up at the bottom. You're going to just get handed off until there is no lower to go. And when we saw that, we just lost it. You know, it's fraud as a service, basically. Yeah. It's people who know they aren't the people who should be taking the study. They're taking the study. 5 or 10% of it are making it through the screener. You're getting nonsensical answers. It's very hard to filter them out because they made it through the screeners. And we just said this whole model is broken. The yeah. whole model of them maintaining panels of people who have signed up to take surveys is just broken for the kind of surveys we run and the kind of people that we're trying to recruit.
So if we think about where this is coming from, right? I think it's coming from two main sources. And feel free to jump in here, Scott, to add your opinion as well. But one is, it's this thinking among researchers and enterprises alike over the last 20, 30, 40 years that research should be cheap, right? It's always, I want to make a $50 million decision, but I don't want to spend more than $10,000 on my research, right? Now, does that make sense? If that much value is at stake, probably not. But that's what causes companies to go to panels. That's what causes panels to go to lower quality panels to just, it's all about the price of the research, right? The cheaper, the better, without evaluating whether paying $10,000 for research that's absolutely worthless is worth it, when maybe a $100,000 project could be truly provide truly actionable insights, right? So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, because of this notion, I think over the last, again, 20, 30 years, no one has really invested in actually creating capabilities to get these niche audiences, right? These like business professionals. And so you accumulate these huge panels that are very often just accumulated because for consumers, where you have a lot of homogeneity among the group, right? It's like by gender, by zip codes, and you can accumulate large amounts of people that are willing to take surveys for $1 and $5 and so on. But you probably get very, very few CFOs, marketing directors, or those people, right? Because as you said, they make maybe $50 to $100 an hour. They're not going to spend their time signing up for a panel to do research, right? So you as a company go to these panels, and you won't find the people in there that you need. So what's the solution, right? The solution to B2B marketing, to B2B research, is either you have, let's say, 100 million people in your network, qualified business professionals for which you know every single thing. And we're now talking basically about LinkedIn, right? And they are ready to go at any point in time to do your project. Or if you don't have this, and no one has this, and LinkedIn is not open to be used at scale for research, then your alternative is to recruit people on the spot, right? And in many different cases, you have researchers then manually scrambling to send LinkedIn messages out, right, or emails or go through lists, but you can't get people at scale for a project that requires even 50 people, let alone 3,000, right? And that's where that's what we're really trying to address with Newton X, where every single person that we contact in the first place is pre-vetted, right? So we have some form of information on them that verifies their position, whether it's a corporate email address, it's their resume, it's their LinkedIn profile, where we verify that the profile is legit. And so that means with the 85 to 90% probability, the person we're sending into the study is already the right fit, right? And so you don't even have in the first place someone who makes it through the screener, right? It's at least an IT decision maker if your project is IT. And then maybe they haven't worked with a specific CRM software, but they have worked with another CRM software, right? And then the screener does the rest, but the people that make it in are truly the right people. And so by choosing this bottom-up approach, you send high quality in, you then filter through what's really, really relevant, and you're being left with, you know, quality data that allows you to make the right decisions. Now, is that more expensive than working with a panel? Absolutely, right? You have to pay a finance decision maker or IT decision maker, depending on the length of the study, $50, $60, $70. So if you want to make a margin, you have to charge maybe double that, right? So now we're looking at $100, $120, which is very different from what you pay to a panel. But again, it's really the difference between totally useless data and then, you know, expensive but absolutely actionable data, which often in the context of a multi-million dollar decision, business decision, is worth the investment.
Well, and the thing too that, I mean, that just felt so wrong to me was the percentage of the money that we were spending with a panel that was making it to the participant, right? You know, if we're spending $60 with a panel and the participant is getting a dollar, it's kind of like we could have just gone to the, you know, bottom of the bucket, recruited 60 times as many people as we needed. And so one of the things that we like about Newton X is, you know, we know that the participants are getting a much higher incentive, and it makes it worth it for the right people to participate in the research. And the other thing I would say is the market research companies like us, this was not a trivial decision for us, right? We knew we were going to be going back to clients that we had worked with in the past and quoting them much higher prices for studies than we had in the past, or new clients would come in and they would compare us against two or three other vendors and we would be quoting a much higher price for this. And we just said, you know, we are only delivering good data. We're only delivering decision quality data. If it means we don't even have a quant business, we're willing to accept that. But we took on the responsibility of educating our clients and saying, you know, have you ever looked at open ends that are kind of a sentence, but they don't make any sense? Have you ever seen, you know, the ratios of solutions that people are using be totally out of whack? Here's what our investigation showed is going on behind the scenes. So if you want to go with another market research vendor, no problem. A good chunk of people said, no, you know, the data's got to be good. We understand. We hear what you're saying. I feel like you've done an intervention. I feel like you've read our mind. You know, we've seen exactly these, you know, puzzling, concerning issues that you've talked about. And other ones have said, we just don't have the budget for it. We're going to go with somebody else. Yeah. And in our experience, 6 months later, they might be back and they might say, you know, we ran into exactly what you said. But it's incumbent on us, the market research vendors, to, I think, have the courage to deliver quality and to educate the customers on what that takes.
Yeah, there's a huge shift happening, right? And it's still going on, it's gonna take time, where B2B market research is growing at an astronomic pace, right? You see it, if you look at expert networks, for example, a $5 billion industry, and then you look at the more traditional market research industry and the B2B portion growing. And that's, you know, because researchers and enterprises are slowly realizing that what the approach has been over the last few years is wrong, right? It's plain wrong, because when you go with low quality options, the hours you put in on both sides in terms of teams going through the data, right, filtering out the data, refielding, that adds up to cost that is kind of hidden, and that's not really reflected in a CPI, but it's there. And then the much more dangerous cost is obviously the wrong business decision based on the data, right? And there are companies and market research firms who have realized this and are doing it the right way. And there are companies who are not yet doing it. But keep in mind, if you are a company who's doing it the old way, if your competitor is doing it differently, they might already have an advantage over you, right? And that's kind of something that really people need to understand. And saying that they don't have the budget, I mean, of course, companies might not have a multi-million dollar budget like a Fortune 500 company, but start with 30% of the sample, right? But with high quality data, then doing 100% of what you used to do and really see what you can afford and put this in context to the decisions at stake. And then you get better business results, you stay competitive, you drive, you know, long-term sustainable growth, rather than, you know, compromising on a research budget in the short term and then dealing with almost arbitrary decisions on results that make no sense, right? Like you said yourself.
Yeah, and I would say too, just getting comfortable with a smaller N. So if you, instead of doing a survey of 300, if you do a survey of 100, but they're real people, it's honestly better to have 100 real people than 300 people of which 100 are real. Because how do you separate the signal from the noise? People talk about margin of error. Well, margin of error doesn't, it's really a signal to noise ratio that you're looking for. Margin of error doesn't tell you how reliable your data is if two-thirds of it is made up, right? What's the margin of error of that? So just putting 300 versus 100 in the calculator doesn't really tell you the whole story. And so that's been an education for our clients too, of 100 that are right is better than 300 of which two-thirds are noise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, amazing. So maybe last piece of advice, you know, to anyone out there listening to this, if you run a B2B research project, you know, ask yourself, are the fees that are being charged reasonable? If someone charges you, you know, $50, but they, you know, you want to speak to CEOs, does that really stand, you know, in proportion to each other, right? You know, is the company specialized on B2B, or are they doing it all over, or are they doing mostly B2C and just repurposing their panel, right? And then, you know, really go deep and ask for profiles, you know, maybe ask for follow-up calls from the panel, have questions in there, and really make sure to check the quality left and right, because the companies that actually can deliver the right people will have no problem to prove it. Whether it's, you know, in the case of Cascade Insights and Newton X, you know, you really see through the technology and the scale that, you know, you see it in the quality, it all makes sense. Have open ends in there, you get real answers. Ask for a follow-up call with some of the respondents. You will get this call. With a panel, you will never get it because they themselves don't even know who it is.
And I'll, just to close out on that, as a market research company that's then analyzing the data, the joy of working with really good quality data versus just the sinking feeling in your stomach of looking at data and saying, you know, how are we going to filter the garbage out of this? Just knowing you can take the data and just start, you know, building charts and doing analysis and doing data exploration and seeing what kind of segments you can find because you can absolutely trust the data is, it's such a weight lifted off your shoulders to go this direction that I can't, you know, I mean, we'll never go back.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, we're at the end of our time, Scott. So thank you very much for today. And let's continue to re-educate the market, you know, and continue to transform market research for better quality. And with that, thanks everyone for listening in today.